This is Karen Lyle of SalesPort Talk, and I invite you to listen into a conversation I had with Sir Robin Knox Johnson about the weather encountered at sea by racers in a round-the-world clipper race.
If you go down the South Atlantic and you're getting down towards Uruguay and Argentina, indeed, you get quite a lot of squalls, and they're nasty, and they're renowned amongst seamen because they come up with very little warning and they hit you very hard. And everyone thinks, you know, oh, well, sailing down there is nice and easy. No, it isn't. It can be really, really difficult. And you've got to be totally alert. And the whole secret is, when you see a potential thing coming in, get your sails down fast, because otherwise the wind is going to blow you on your side.
Yesterday we were sailing along 24 hours out from finishing the race. Come across a few occluded fronts, as they call them in the local area, cigar fronts. We experienced between 60 to 80 knot squalls coming through. One final test after 5,000 miles, an incident with not being able to release our tack line in time, which resulted in, how can I put this nicely, the explosion of our code 2 kite. Good effort from everybody to get it down. What can I say about the weather? Lightning pretty much throughout the entire evening, fork lightning all throughout the sky for 12 hours or so.
What you've got to realize is those crews are amateurs. They've had a 4 weeks training, and by this time they've sailed about 5,000 miles, so they're not exactly amateurs. But nevertheless, for them, exploring the different areas of the ocean and the different weather systems you can get is still something they've got to learn about. And coming down that coast can be difficult. And people think, you know, it's a piece of cake. No, it isn't. The sea never lets you off. You've got to be alert the whole time. We always used to say, you know, the whole thing about a seaman is he's alert. And you've got to be alert, because those systems come through and they can knock the boat on its side. You know, suddenly people who've never been out of their drawing room, finding their whole world's turned 90 degrees. And yet they come out of it and they survive it and they come out of it. And when I went and met them in Uruguay in Punta del Este, when they finished, you could see the pride they got, because they'd been through something really difficult and they come out of it. And I thought, bless you, you're now learning and you've every reason to be proud of yourselves.
To see the video of that boat in the thunderstorm, go to SalesportTalk.com and click on Round the World Clipper Race Uruguay.
Thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. We're going to have to start paying the great Sir Robin Knox Johnson. He gives us a lot of great content. It is time for SalesportTalk.com segment, which we do on Tuesdays at this time, as always co-hosting my friend Karen Lyle. And Karen, I was back in the studio yesterday, but as we know, there was a big logistical tie-up today. So one more from the house. How are you?
I know. Well, you know, we're going to have to just give our blessings to BBC today, since they're in our studio today.
No doubt about it. We're quite happy to welcome our guest, though, Matthew Byers. He is a flagmaker, and he's on the board of directors for the Pacific Interclub Yachting Association. Matthew, thanks for coming on. And we always see these ships resplendent and all these different flags, and they have so many different meanings and affiliations, and we know that, you know, especially with the Navy, they can communicate messages as well. Let's just start off. How did you get involved in the old Betsy Ross flag-making industry?
I've been collecting Yacht Club Bergies my entire life, ever since I was a little kid. And getting into the flag and Bergie manufacturing business was kind of a bit of a fluke. The Bergie that was flying on my speedboat when I was like 18 years old, I just bought it from the club, flew it for a couple hours, and it tore to shreds, and I paid a couple of dollars for the thing. And I decided there's got to be, you know, let's see what it takes to make one of these things. And I practiced, and I came up with a way to make a Bergie that lasts better than anything that was out there. So it was a bit of a fluke like that. And I ended up contacting some local clubs here in the Bay Area. They liked what I had, and it went from there.
Matthew, you actually are making a private signal for me that is something that is sewn, where all of the parts of it are sewn together and there's no printing on it.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about the different ways in which a flag can be constructed?
Well, these days there are sewn and appliqué flags, which is where you take the different pieces of fabric and you sew them together to manufacture the flag. Another way of making a flag, which is recommended for very complicated designs, is digital printing, which is becoming very popular these days.
Burgees, which are mostly pennant shaped, I guess they don't have to be, but there are different rules. You know, like the American flag, you can't fly at night unless you put a light on it. There are certain burgees that have to be on the main masthead or maybe from a halyard underneath the lower starboard spreader. I mean, what are some of the rules for these burgees?
Well, there's on board and on the mast ashore, there are specific places where your flags go. For example, ensign on the stern, burgee on the bow of a powerboat, or at the top of the mast on a sailboat. These days, the burgee can be flown from the starboard yardarm on a sailboat because there's so much electronic gear, antennas, weather vanes, you know, what have you up there. The burgee would get wrapped up in that, so you can primarily fly it from the starboard yard these days. And ashore as well on your mast at the club, just like on a boat, burgee up top, the ensign on the gaff, which represents the stern, officers' flags starting from the outside starboard yard going in, then from port yard outside going in. The biggest thing that we get, or that I get asked, is why is the U.S. ensign flying from the gaff on the nautical flagpole instead of up top? Where the rules say no flag is supposed to fly higher than the American ensign. The nautical-style flagpole with a yard and gaff represents the mast of a ship heading out to sea, and on the old sailing ships, you take a look at old pictures, the ensign flies from the gaff. So it's repeated ashore because the yacht club is considered a ship out to sea.
Well, you know, Matthew, also this tradition of flying flags, from my research, and I'm sure you have some things to add to that with your extensive knowledge, it started, you know, back in the days of the tall ships, you know, more than 300 years ago, when captains or companies flew flags or countries flew flags during wars just so they wouldn't shoot on their own people. What are some of the things you know about, you know, like before the United States was established, you know, as far as how these flags developed?
The going way back hundreds and hundreds of years, the flag that is flown flags that were flown on ships. It's all about communication, where one ship could be identified by another from a distance out to sea. Is it a friend? Is it a foe? Then they have the signal flags, which are still used today for communicating various messages from one ship to another. Not really necessary these days with radio communication, but the Navy still use them. But the flags go back a long way. I can tell you that the oldest flag, at least national flag, that is still flown today is the Danish flag, which has been the national flag of Denmark since 1260.
Yes, as a Danish American, I actually knew that one. We're a couple more questions here for our friend Matthew Byers. What are some of the flags or burgees that are almost like a free ticket into a harbor? Is there a way that they can look up and say, oh, they're a friend, you can come in and use one of our slips?
Well, if you are a member of one yacht club that has official reciprocity with another, you know, fly your Burgee when heading into the port of the club you're visiting. Lots of clubs, like my club in San Rafael, the Loch Lomond Yacht Club, the Corinthian Yacht Club, etc., they require that you fly your Burgee because, once again, it identifies what yacht club you are from, going back to communication.
Well, and also, Matthew, the rules are rather formal when it comes to Burgees for races or cruise-ins where the yachts that are representing the different clubs fly their flags, because there's some competition there. Tell us about how they're used in races.
In racing, mm-hmm. The rules changed recently, a couple of years ago. Originally, for race signals, there were either three flags or cones colored red, white, and blue. The white flag goes up, or the white shape goes up. That's 15 minutes before start. The red shape goes up. That's 10 minutes, or pardon me, 10 minutes for the white shape. 5 minutes, the red shape goes up. And then for go time, the blue shape goes up. Now it's different where you can use various signal flags to represent different fleets that are racing. Or there are what is called, class flags, which is a square flag with the logo of whatever class is going to be racing in that particular series.
I think also the naval ensigns or the war ensigns as well, mm-hmm. to signify the ship in times of war. I think the most famous one is probably the Japanese flag.
Mm-hmm.
The Imperial Navy, of course, it had the rays of red coming off it. And then still to this day, I know the Royal Navy, they use the cross of St. George, but then upper left, they have the Union Jack all over again. Why is it that they just don't fly the regular flag?
Every country is different. You go take a look at the United Kingdom, which you were just discussing. They have a bunch of different flags for various uses. There's the red ensign, which is the red flag with the Union Jack up in the corner. That is for civilian and merchant ships. Then there's the blue ensign, which is for government vessels. And then the white ensign with the cross of St. George is used for naval vessels. And on the blue ensign, whatever department in the government will have its own badge on the fly end of the flag identifying, you know, which department it's from. On the other hand, here in the United States, we just have one flag for everything, whether it's the government, the military, civilian use, that being the Stars and Stripes.
Tell us a little bit about the yacht ensign and how that came to be in New York.
That's an interesting story. Back in the mid-1800s, commercial vessels and quite a few yachts looked exactly the same. And you are required as a commercial vessel to go into check into customs for each port you go into. And the yachtsmen and also the customs officials were getting tired of the yachts having to check in even though they weren't doing any commercial business. So the Navy and the Customs Department asked the New York Yacht Club, I don't remember the year, to design a special signal for the yachts to fly to identify them as not commercial boats so the customs officials wouldn't have to chase after them. So they came up with a design, which is the basically it's a Betsy Ross flag with a fouled anchor in the center of the stars. It was never intended to be flown on the stern as a replacement for the United States ensign, but because of the similarity in design, everybody started doing that, and it is still done so today. It was actually officially taken off the books in 1992, but everybody still still flies it today as a nautical tradition. And if you go outside the United States, like say down to Mexico, Canada, wherever, you don't fly the U.S. Yacht ensign. You only fly the 50-star flag. Only fly the yacht ensign in United States waters.
So, Matthew, for people who want to have their flags made, how do they get a hold of you?
Very simple. Send me an email, mjbflagmaker@gmail.com. I make a fine, high-quality burgee that everybody would be very pleased with. Good-looking, long-lasting.
All right. There he is. Matthew Byers, thanks for coming on the show today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.